you pray with me. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be a pleasure in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So this morning we have a farmer handing off a basket full of freshly gleaned grain, olives, and grapes that he carried for miles and miles on pilgrimage. We have an ancient song that tries to recruit the whole earth, all you lands, for the bass and soprano section. We have a lone man weeping joy at the feet of Jesus. And we have the voice of Mary Oliver, more or less killed, laid flat by delight. Those three scriptures and the reading from Mary Oliver are pictures of something that's hard to pin down with a dictionary definition, as most things worth talking about are. And that thing is thanks. But maybe you'd say, thanks is easy to define. Just means gratitude. Except giving a synonym is not the same thing as giving a definition. And gratitude's a bit of a shrunken synonym. You can feel gratitude. You can't do a gratitude. Whereas you can feel thankful, but you can also say thanks. You can give a thank you card. You can give a gift that is a thank you gift where the word doesn't appear. Second or third or fourth language teachers sometimes use picture lexicons instead of dictionary definitions, especially with beginning language learners. Because if you want to recognize a thing in itself, a picture of an elephant or a traffic light is going to be worth more than 1,000 words. And one thing I think is really important to get well beyond the bounds of today is that the Christian scriptures go really light on technical definitions. They prefer to spell things out in image and story. Maybe that's God's modus operandi. So we have a farmer, a song, and a prostrate former leper. In other words, thanks. Thanksgiving, whatever it is that. But stay with that language learning analogy for just another second with me. Because without having witnessed every birth in human history personally, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that no one here was born with the words thank you on their lips. And that's understandable, of course. We all had a lot going on. Just then, we were 10 seconds into learning to breathe as we encountered the world, sensory overload, all of that. But thank you, like most human things, is something we learn, which means it is something we are taught. And I mean both the syllables themselves, the sounds that represent this thing, whatever it is, whatever the language, danke, merci, toda, but also the timing, the ritual of the thing. Nate, what do you say to Miss Peltier? Prompts my mom. Not for the first time. Thank you, Miss Peltier. So it turns out, I didn't know it then, but mumbling through liturgies was going to be a transferable skill into adulthood. You know, I don't ever recall, not once in my childhood, my mother giving me a definition of thanks. Thanks was a thing she insisted I say in certain situations. And like so many other things, it seems that my parents were remarkably optimistic that repetition would make thanks make sense. That ritual action would in time spark in me some genuine feeling we might call gratitude. A feeling that matched the reality of a moment taking place between me and Miss Peltier, who had chased us out of school to pass me the backpack that I'd forgotten, or between me and my grandma who'd knit me yet another scarf for Christmas, or my sister who'd finally relinquished her icy grip to give me back the toy she'd stolen from me in the first place. Thank you. Thanks is those moments. And the best definition I've come across says that thanks is the favorable response to a favor or gift. But the only reason that definition has any kind of foothold in my mind is that it touches the experience, the remembered story of thanks for the gift that's now inscribed in my body through this strange etiquette liturgy of my childhood, courtesy of my mom. And that is, I think, precisely what's happening to the farmer we see a glimpse of in Deuteronomy. Let me remind you, after you enter the land the Lord is giving you, says Moses, what you're going to want to do is take some of the first fruits of all the produce of the soil, and you're going to pilgrim yourself to the temple in Jerusalem, no matter how many miles that is, and you're going to bring it to the priest on duty that day, and you're going to say this liturgy. I'm going to paraphrase. I can't believe, you will say before the Lord, that I have a place to call home. Because my family, all the way back, we were wanderers. We were migrants for generations. And we were enslaved for generations longer until it seemed we might never be free. And now I'm here, but I'm here only because the Lord heard our affliction, only because the Lord turned the tables on our oppressors, only because the Lord kept us safe and brought us through the desert, and only because there's a land at all to come to, which was created by the Lord in the beginning by his own speech. And it's a land that gives life, that creates food when I put seeds in it. And then, says Moses, you should stretch yourself out on the ground like someone floating in water, because you are, in fact, afloat on the gift that goes all the way down. And then what you should do is you should get up and take that basket heavy with goodness, and you and your kids and any church folk who are at the temple and anyone who's a migrant and still waiting for the Lord to give them a place to call home, and you should eat up and rejoice in all the goodness of the Lord. In other words, thanks. And I suspect it's no accident that the ritual that Moses commands the people of Israel here, and Moses is basically Israel's wilderness mom, that he is prescribing them in this liturgy that they also lie flat on the ground. They get in touch with the ground, the land, the ground of our being, the ground which holds us in space and sustains us in life by the sheer grace of the one who is being itself, Israel's Lord, ours. And it probably isn't accidental that when the leper finally leaps and sings his way to Jesus, that he goes flat on the ground too, to love the ground at the feet of Jesus. And it's no accident that Mary Oliver says, prayers are made of grass. Thanks puts us in touch with the ground of our being. So let me tell you this. What does all this mean? Gratitude isn't just a feeling, though it's that. And it's not just a journaling technique that manipulates our brain chemistry. Thanks isn't just a thing we say or a card we buy. Thanks is a ritual story that we recite and reenact that sparks in us an aha that can set you weeping joy. Thanks is nothing more and nothing less than simply being in touch with reality, with the world as it in fact is. Gift. God's gift. The Jewish and Christian claim is that thanks is simply true. It's true to the way things are. When St. Paul asks the Corinthians, what do you guys have as you bicker over this and that? What do you have that you didn't receive? He is hanging them out, them and us, over the canyon depths of the reality of the God who made and makes and gave and gives for the sheer generosity of it. And I think that this matters enormously because illusions are dangerous, and living by them is dangerous. Think of Wendell Berry, the poet farmer who spent his lifetime trying to help us English speakers here in the West see what happens when we lose touch with the reality of gift. We blast rocks and bulldoze graveyards and we poison rivers and we flatten forests all to clear the way, now I'm quoting him, to clear the way for the economy and culture of self-realization, of self-creation, to make way, he says, for the passage of the crowd of the individuated, the autonomous, the self-actuated, the homeless, with their many eyes open toward the objective, open towards something that is not here, that is not now, something that says what is here and what is now isn't what I'm interested in. Ours, says Barry, has become a way of life in which dissatisfaction gets to make decisions for us. Something worse than COVID has gotten past our cultural immune system. It's the virus of what Toronto's own Mary Jo Leddy simply and frequently calls not enough. And we know how it multiplies and breeds in us. I don't have enough breeds I am not enough breeds there is not enough. And then we live like all of that is true. And what makes that tragic is that it's not true. Because even when the news looks bleak, and even now when the earth groans under our feet because we have trampled it, even now when the church is beset by the pressures of change and the ghosts of our own genuine guilt, thanks is still the truth of things deep down. Thanks is what being in touch with reality sounds and feels like. Because God has given, and it is enough today, and it will be enough tomorrow. And we are here because we are learning to confess this. And sometimes, even when we're lucky, to know it, like an aha that rises up in our bones. And I need it. I need it because I'll tell you, I lose touch with reality so easily it boggles the mind. And so I need more. I'm going to need, actually, to trace in my imagination the picture of that pilgrim farmer and to map that onto myself. And I'm going to want to linger over the image of that flat, happy leper. But I'm going to need more than a yearly ritual at harvest or a once-in-a-lifetime jolt. And maybe you do too. So I'll tell you what. What if every week we met right here and we all brought a basket of all the sorted fruit of our lives, some of it impressive, some of it shuffled toward the bottom. And what if we hear again that story that Jesus took the bread and he broke it and he did what? He gave thanks. And more than that, really, more than that, because He became thanks. He became the basket of fruit offered up, the food given to the feast to those still looking for a home. He became for us God's own thanks made flesh. Jesus, the person here, offering himself as a liturgy of the etiquette of thanks in order to put us in touch with reality somewhere deep down where definitions don't reach. Amen.